Manx Radio's Countryside is brought to you by NFU Mutual.
Hello and welcome to Countryside here on Manx Radio. I'm Simon Clark.
And I'm Kiri Kermode. On Sunday, I went along to a talk on the truth about wool with a visiting speaker, Camilla from Patagonia.
And I popped along to one of the gardens on display at the Open Gardens Weekend run by the Parish of the Northern Plain. But firstly, Kiri, we'll start off with a subject that was brought to our attention, I suppose, when we spoke to contractor Philip Hampton a couple of weeks ago on Countryside, and emphasised in the thoughts and things that can go through your mind when you're on your own on the tractors in the countryside, worrying about crops and the weather and things like that.
Mental health is always so tricky, especially within agriculture. And it is great that organisations have started up to support. But it's always just knowing who to turn to, isn't it? It's getting that advice when we need it most.
Yes, and we're lucky enough to have a chat with Nicola Kerfey and Paula Dunlop from the recently formed I'll Stand Up to Suicide organisation. And we had a chat with them to get their thoughts on how vulnerable farmers are, or people who are maybe isolated out in the countryside. Well, firstly, Paula Dunlop and Nicola Kerfey, welcome to Countryside. A sensitive subject for many reasons for lots of people around the Isle of Man, which we'll come to some personal experiences a little bit later in the conversation. But firstly, as we heard from Philip Hampton, Nicola, a couple of weeks ago, out in the tractors on your own, weather affecting things, worrying about crops, can be a lonely place.
Yes, we know that in the UK, 3 farmers a week take their own lives, and that the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution has stated that poor mental health is the biggest challenge facing farming these days. So it's a real problem, really, across the Isle of Man. Well, worldwide, really.
Yeah. Well, when you say it in them terms, 3 a week on average, it's incredible to think of that, isn't it?
It is. And those problems are compounded by Brexit, inheritance tax, farm succession, and just the loneliness, really, of farming.
But I mean, Nicola, does it, in the statistic, does it give sort of reasons why people in that occupation are so vulnerable?
Just really lone working and the issues that I've discussed, really. Yeah. I think in days gone by, there would be lots of agricultural workers on farms, and I think despite the digital age, that people were closer, communities were closer. I think that's part of the problem, really.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, where years ago when they had the small tractors, and people from different farms used to come round, didn't they? And one would have a big baler, one would have a spud harvester, so they'd all sort of go round to each other's farms, where now there's just different big machinery around and contractors coming in, and people don't see as many people.
No, just one person, and all the stress comes on that person. And we expect, I think people are too proud, really, to say that they're lonely or that they're stressed or ask for help. So that's what I'll Stand Up to Suicide is really for.
And Paula, you were one of the founders of the charitable organisation.
Yes, that's right. We launched in October 2023. And the aim was, actually, it started with a conversation with another charity, similar charity in the UK, when I was on a training course. And I felt that that's something that we could mirror and do on the Isle of Man. It's definitely much needed.
Yeah, and it's a strange place. You'd think a small place like the Isle of Man, where everyone knows each other's business, or maybe that's one of the contributing factors, where, as Nicola said, people are so proud and they like to be a little bit more private, and it's bottled up.
Yeah, and we found that very interesting, actually, when we delivered some suicide prevention training to the young farmers a few weeks ago. And we were doing some role play and some kind of discussions around the farming community and what stops maybe young lads from talking to their older kind of colleagues or their older family members. And they said that they would be embarrassed to ask if they were having problems, if there's anything they could help with. And it's very much, they felt that the perception would be that they were weak you know, men in general, that it's a sign of weakness or vulnerability to discuss the issues you're having. There's like society's expectations that you maintain the all your issues on very broad shoulders and you get on with it. So there's an element of pride, maybe embarrassment, feeling a bit guilty for some decision making or whatever. But certainly the young lads felt that it would be quite challenging to approach an older farmer and ask them any personal questions.
And it's an interesting one, really, because of all the campaigns that have happened over the last 15, 20 years or so. You know, the cancer side of things with mm-hmm. the bowel cancer screening and men with the prostate cancer screening, where it's become a lot more open and encouragement for people to talk about that. And you think to yourself, well, surely that's helping on the suicide side of it as well, but must be that little bit different.
I think absolutely. I think there's still a lot of stigma around mental health and suicide, and there's a reluctance to talk about that. But like everything else, maybe it takes time, and we just have to keep plugging away, and there will be a shift in this for sure. And one of the aims of the charity is to raise awareness and get out there and talk about suicide and not keeping it hidden and not keeping it kind of a taboo subject that people are fearful of. And I think the younger generation are kind of getting that now. They're starting to talk more openly about mental health and emotional issues. Our concern has always been the slightly over 40 age group seems to be the higher ratio of men that take their life.
Mm. Well, Nicola, I did speak to you before we did the interview, and the suicide part that you're involved with in the charitable organisation now, it must have been part of your life from a very young age.
Yes, my dad took his own life when I was 17. My brothers and sisters were younger than me. And one of the things that struck me really was that my dad was never mentioned again, really. He was very much put in the shadows. And I went off to nursing college after that. And I was always very keen that just because my dad had taken his own life, that didn't dim the person that he was or his light. So even though it's difficult and it's quite ingrained in you not to talk about your loved one, I think it's really important that we're brave enough to speak about it, because we can't ask people to phone the phone line and ask them to do a brave thing if we're not brave enough to talk about suicide. So when our Stand Up to Suicide came along, I was quite keen to get involved, really, as a way of getting the community to talk about suicide. So yeah, that's the reason that I volunteer for our Stand Up to Suicide. I work on the phone line and I'm the volunteer coordinator. We've got a phone line that operates from 2 till 10 at night, and that's staffed by volunteers, volunteers who take a 2-hour shift, and they can work from home. There's an app, so anyone that is feeling lonely or down can ring the phone line, and there's trained volunteers on the other end.
Mm. Well, obviously it's very personal subject to yourself and many other people listening to the programme, but I mean, as a 17-year-old, did you, your family, anyone in your family see any of the signs?
Not that I know of, no. Not that I know of. The only thing that had happened was that the lime man had come and the lime had blown off the field. But that was the only thing, really, that anyone could pinpoint.
And that seems to be the trend with suicide issues, doesn't it, Paula, where a lot of the time there is no physical sort of signs?
Well, we also deliver some training on suicide prevention and awareness. And within that, we are actually getting the information out there that when people go to the coroner's inquest, they actually do realise that there were some subtle, subliminal messages that had been given out, but maybe we're just not aware of it. And so that's where our education is lying, and starting to look at some changes in behaviour, some changes in the language that people are talking in the weeks preceding taking their own life, that there may be clues, and oftentimes there are some little clues that are going on there. And that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about engaging people in. It's like, you know, be aware, kind of notice those kind of little changes that are going on. And it's at that point, then you can approach someone and be brave enough and have the confidence to say, are you contemplating ending your life? Are you thinking about suicide?
Well, there'll be a lot of people listening to Countryside thinking, wow, you know, that this information that I may have missed in my times when a friend or a family member have took their own life. And I suppose, as you mentioned, training people or just chatting to them to recognise signs, Paula, it could be such a big help to saving somebody's in the future.
Yes, absolutely. And that's another element of I'll Stand Up to Suicide. So while we've got the phone line to help people in suicide distress, we also are very keen to get out into the community to raise awareness, to raise the profile of the charity and what we do. And we run a 3-hour suicide prevention workshop course. And within that, it's called QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer. And within that, it is about giving the confidence for individuals to ask the question, talk around suicide, approach people, check out and learn some of those little differences that may be happening or those the signs that someone may be really struggling. So that's really important. And as I say, we've already started with the young farmers. We're moving to Manx Farming Union as well. We're talking to them. We're talking to lots of areas within the countryside to get out and about and do that training. And it will be offered free because we're getting lots of sponsorship to do that.
Mm. And Nicola, you mentioned about manning the phone lines. And how difficult has that been? Or has it been helpful for you?
No, I don't find that particularly challenging. Not as challenging as coming here and talking to you, Simon.
But I suppose it's laughter's the medicine, they say, isn't it? I mean, you laugh, you cry, sometimes it's just a helpful coping mechanism, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And when we're on the courses, we encourage people to, you know, we use humour, but we also talk about hope. And that's all about the hope to change what's happening in society and reaching out to people and letting them know that, you know, things will pass and we can get them some support and it'll get better.
There we are, Nicola Curfee and Paula Dunlop talking about the recently formed I'll Stand Up to Suicide organisation. And, yeah, it's a difficult one, Kiri, and, you know, experience. Probably a lot of people around the Isle of Man, like we've heard, have had experience or know something that's happened to somebody, which if there would have been the right conversations held or the right help available, could have helped in many ways.
It certainly is the case. You can do your bit as a friend or a neighbour. You know, if you know somebody that is quite lonely or lives on their own, just swing round and call in, see how they're doing. It takes a couple of minutes or even a text message. But I'll Stand Up to Suicide. Do have a helpline, 803 040 2pm till 10pm each day. That's 803 040. So if you're wanting somebody to chat to, I'm sure there's always a friendly voice at the other end there. You're never alone. That's one thing for sure. Just, call up your neighbour.
You're listening to Countryside here on Manx Radio with Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark. Well, this is the sort of weather where sheep get hot. And that's why they're clipped, Kiri, isn't it? And people often wonder, you know, does the wool just get thrown away? Or on the Isle of Man in particular, what happens to it?
It's incredible that wool sort of created Great Britain. You know, it was built on the back of it, the industry and the value of that raw material. And it's hard to believe that it's actually worthless, which is so terrible. On the weekend, I went along to Knockalo to catch up with a visiting speaker, Camilla Quinteros from Patagonia. She was doing a seminar about the truth about wool, the undervalued natural resource. I went along to see what she had to say, a woman of many talents.
Well, welcome to the island, Camilla. This isn't your first time. We've just had a wonderful seminar delivered by you, The Truth About Wool. Now tell me, how did you ever end up on the island?
Well, we ended up as a family because a Kenny's shearer, friend from New Zealand, he told him that in the old years he used to go to an island called Isle of Man. They were just talking about the bike races and he was like, yeah, I used to shear on the Isle of Man. And Kenny was like, what, bike? Shearing? And how when? So then this friend put Kenny in contact with Daniel Creer. And so the 4 years ago, through this NWAC concession that there is with the UK farming, where they open for the shearers for 3 months to go to the UK to shear sheep. So he came over here, and I didn't come because our daughter was like 3 months old.
Oh,
so I stayed at home until she was a bit older. And then Kenny said, like, I just went to Scotland for some wool handling competitions. And then he said, like, you know, Daniel and Alice are very happy for you both to come over just to visit.
How wonderful.
So then we joined him. That was the first year. And then he finished the season and we were like, do you think we can come back maybe next year? Our daughter will be a bit older. I can maybe rub fleeces. So yeah, and then this is our fourth year.
Oh my word, that's an incredible story. But for home to you, Camilla, it's so far away.
Yeah, so we are from a city called Punta Arenas. It's in Chile, but we call it just Patagonia because it's a very remote area. It's a region that is not connected with the Chilean territory because we have all the fjords that separate the land. So, for example, if we have to drive to the capital of Chile, Santiago, we need to drive to cross the Andes and drive all the way through Argentina, getting to Chile again through the Andes. So that's like 3 days driving. So we are very isolated. Wow. And then the only, like, we get all the supplies, like food supplies of, like, all the supplies for a city. We get it by lorries, but the lorries need to cross the same road that I told you, like, through the Andes. So in winter time, sometimes we don't get, like, food or fuel. It's a bit complicated the way it is geographically, Patagonia. So we're closer to Argentinian. So that's why we just say Patagonia. Like one area that is Chile and Argentina for this remote and isolated.
And you think, we believe here on the Isle of Man, we're quite isolated. So that is absolutely not true compared to the journey you obviously had to do as a young person growing up. And you grew up and you went off to university. You've got a heck of a backstory, Camilla, on what you do.
Yeah, well, just by being raised on Easter Island, which is very... rural, basic, natural childhood, and not wearing clothes until I was six,
cool.
Just very wild. And I was told once that your first years defines you, and I think that's why I've been always like drawn into very remote and isolated places. So then I went to university in Punta Arenas at home, but then had the opportunity to keep doing research, and I ended up in this remote island in Shetland Island called Fair Isle. And always looking for rural, remote, isolated places, and luckily in shearing takes you to those places as well.
And that said, shearing, you do, like you say, travel the world. Today's talk, it was absolutely fascinating, the truth about wool. Now, you're not only, you go around shearing, you're a wool handler, you're a wool grader. And that is really important as well. I know you take part in the competitions, but how important is wool? You know, it's a very natural raw material.
Yeah, it's very natural. And there's nothing like new, I think we could say, because everything is discovered already. And in the old days, they used to use the wool a lot more than now. So it's not like we are telling something new. We're just saying things that for some reason they stop being told. So I think it doesn't matter where you come from or where we are. Like right now, this is a couple of Chileans talking about the structure of the fiber of the wool, you know. But I think we need to keep talking about it, try to put it into schools. In, like I suggested, like, let's try to put it in biology, you know, for kids to learn about this very complex structure that gives a lot of benefits. And maybe we by knowing more about it, we can win this battle against the synthetics, you know, that is winning, and it's not fair, because what more positive and good for the environment fibre than wool.
Yeah. And you were saying some of the properties of the wool, you know, with it being fire resistant, you're talking about the emergency services, it's non-static, you know, you can use it in outer space as suits for the people that are, you know, travelling around out there. These are the topics that you love to cover. You're very passionate about education. And do you think, you know, it is the unknown that this is why wool isn't getting used so much?
In part, it's because of the technology. You know, because wool harvest is a rural job. It's a very physical job. And the island is fine because we have connection in most of the places. But for example, Patagonia, where we come from, we don't have phone reception in all the places. So now youth, not even youth, like people in general, don't know what to do if they don't have their phones, so they don't go to work. So we are losing shearers, wool handlers, wool classer, they're still there, but I think it's just because of the technology. And because we're also, like, as a human being, we're getting lazy. Yeah. So this is a very physical job. I mean, you are like, 8 hours jumping and wrapping and jumping and stitching a bag and moving, dragging a bag. And the shearer can't even tell you how many calories they burn with the amount of sheep they're shearing. But it's just, that's the problem. I think we're getting more comfortable with all this technology that we have now.
It's the easy way out, isn't it? It's the easy options every time. And with this disconnect, I know that you've been doing talks while you're here on the Isle of Man to school children, to various groups, demonstrations. Back home, is it the same? Is it the same in Chile? Do they not want to know either?
We are slowly trying to get there. Nobody does it. Nobody's doing wool education. And we started last year, just like our family company, you know, like Oveja Nomade or Nomad Sheep in English, we decided, okay, let's do it. We, as I said, like, it's very easy to just stay at home and complain, but let's do something for it. So let's do, I don't know, show demonstration. Let's talk about this with kids, with very young kids. And I think slowly and hopefully we can keep doing more, or maybe in the talk someone will find it very useful and someone else can do more talks about it. So I think slowly we're getting there, but we need to talk about more about the wool and the wool harvest.
And that said, it's a product that's easy to get rid of as well. You know, it's biodegradable. There's so many other good properties about it.
Yeah, there's so many uses because of the properties that it has. But we can use it everywhere. I mean, that will be like another talk of all the uses and all the innovation that many countries are doing. But also, there are very nice and interesting campaigns from other countries. I mean, Spain has these guys called Wool Dreamers. They are fascinated the way they put these videos and the way they are talking about the wool. Like in the old days, there's campaigns in South Africa and Canada. Australians and New Zealand, they have been always very, very related. And the UK as well, but Portugal, you know, and we are starting as well, like South America. So I think we need to try to follow them, yeah. Try to know and try to get ourselves involved into know what other countries are doing to promote the wool.
And you think one day it will make that resurgence?
No, definitely. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I'm so positive and that we are doing something good here on the island. I mean, we love here. We have been already 4 years on the island. Our daughter, just by coming over here, she said, like, oh, my home in Isle of Man. She thinks that she lives here, like her house is here. But I really want to believe that we are helping somehow by shearing sheep across the island, wrapping the fleeces. With these talks, with the Isle of Man Shears, that it's the second year, it was this year, and it was a success. And next year we want to implement for the kids to involve and do like a teddy bear shearing competition with wooden hand pieces. Amazing. Or maybe we can just have a couple of minutes and do like a very express the truth about the wool talk. Yeah. And you know, but I think we are making an impact. If it's tiny, at least it's something.
Absolutely. And after here, Camille, where are you heading off to?
So we are going to the Royal Welsh Show and Corwen Shear, doing sheep shearing, wool handling competition. We will do a wool handling development test, Chile versus Wales at Corwen.
Cool.
That will be very interesting. And then, yeah, we are heading to Scotland for the end of the shearing season. There's a few sheep that we will do there, and heading to the Black Isle Show, which is a lovely, lovely show. And then back home to the pre-lamb shearing in August.
Oh, my word. That is such a busy, busy time for you. And next year you will be back, though.
Oh, hopefully. We want to come back. At least the nursery says, like, yeah.
Amazing.
Agnes can come to this place, so we are very, yeah, very grateful for the nursery as well. It has helped for me to rub fleeces relaxed, even though you're running all day. But yeah, no, it's we really want to come back, because I can say that it's our family here. I mean, the Creer is our family, and when we are at home, yeah, we just miss them.
There we go, that was Camilla Quintras from Patagonia talking about the truth of wool.
Interesting, isn't it? And as you said at the start of that interview, how wool was such an industry with loads of the looms and everything around Great Britain, the wool industry, not just the wool used for clothing, but other things, threads and the lanolin used for, you know, soaps and products like that. All gone.
It's such a natural material, and the sheep have to be sheared for their welfare purposes. It's just such a crying shame. But maybe one day there will be a resurgence back to it. And Camilla, it was great to hear everything that she spoke about, her travels around the world, the wool handling and grading. She's here every year shearing sheep. A wonderful woman. And thanks for the Farming and Wildlife Advisory Group for organising Camilla to do the speaking for this event.
Mm. Well, it's been a reasonable spell of weather, and a lot of people have been out gardening and getting their gardens tuned up into the colourful sights we see around the countryside and gardens of the Isle of Man. Well, the parish off the Northern Plain, they held over the weekend, Friday and Saturday, an open gardens weekend, a choice of 9 different gardens around Andreas and Lazare and Sulby, and along the coast road as well, for people to have a look at, open their gardens to the general public to show off what they can do in their gardens with various different diversities, from just flower beds or fountains and ponds and things like that. I popped along to one of the gardens on display at Sulby. Well, Carol and John Ainley, nice to be invited into your garden.
Thank
here.
Thank you very much.
One of 9 that was on display. Who's in command of your one?
Carol.
John.
I think about something, then Carol goes and does the work, and then I get all the praise.
Yeah, John's the gardener, I'm the labourer. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it really is a nice... They're all different, these gardens. And it's the perfect time of year for it, and the colours are magnificent.
It is, and we've got such a variety of gardens. You've got Ravensdale, which has got the huge history around Ravensdale Castle. We've got some small gardens, we've got a tiny garden around there, backing onto the stream with ducks in. We're just a variety of gardens.
A bit of everything, bit of everything. And I think that makes the choice. I think that's what people like to see. Yeah.
Well, I've been around with the Andris Gardens in the past, and some of the participants in this year's event have been displaying their gardens for the Andris one,
yes,
as well.
Mm.
But is it all sort of the same group?
It is. Yeah. It's the parish of the Northern Plain, so that's Blaff Churches, Andreas, Sulby and Jerby as well, although Jerby are slightly different. And then this year we're also sharing the work with Sulby Methodist, so they're doing all the refreshments and where we've organised all the gardens. So it's a joint effort between two different denominations, really, which is lovely in how church should be.
But it's nice, John, that people coming in and you can see the smiles on their faces there. And it must give you some personal satisfaction yourselves.
It does, because what I think looks boring or not interesting, they rave about. So you see your own garden from a different perspective when other people talk about it. So that's quite interesting in itself. I mean, there's some cornflowers there that were the cheapest packet of seeds you can get, and they've been the big success of the year. And yet, to me, it's just a packet of seeds. So quite interesting what other people want to see.
And do you get the chance, parishes around the Isle of Man, do they have open garden days? And do you find yourself heading there to get ideas or just to look around?
We do, yeah. We haven't been around any this year, but certainly I think that's part of the benefit of doing the open gardens is you share ideas. It's a bit like the poor man's Chelsea Flower Show. You can see what other people are doing, and if it works for them, it could work for us on the island. So it's a great way to see what's happening.
Yeah, of course, they have the great seed swap events in Laxey and things like that, and chance for everyone to get together, same thing.
Well, we're selling plants here at the front again for the fundraising, and they're just things that I've grown on that I had too many of, and rather than just throw them on the compost heap, if I can sell them and make some more money,
and also get them out of the house and out of my way. That is more important. So I'm delighted that they've all sold.
But amongst all the beautiful flowers, you've got some fairly unique things. Are they wind driven?
Yep. The two wind charms, the two circular ones, we saw those when we were in the States in Utah several years ago. And on a holiday whim, we ordered a couple and had them shipped over. So you don't see many more over here.
You'll not have enough wind here to generate electric, will you?
Oh, no, certainly. They'd virtually take off on some days. Mm. Yes.
But the as well as it, you've got a great open bit when we look out this side where the sun is shining now. Mm. But some wonderful elm trees in here,
absolutely,
which are towering above.
Yeah. I don't know how many years old they were, but they looked virtually the same size now when we got pictures of the station when it closed in the 60s, and they were still just as visible then. So they must be a couple of hundred years old.
Well, certainly 100 years at least, yeah. So they're a bit of a pain when it's windy because you're forever picking branches off the floor. But apart from that, they're quite a feature to the garden.
Yeah.
And of course the station here, just looking over there, I've got some obviously the railway line closed in the very late 1960s, and part of it still remains here though.
Yep, that was here when we came, and that actually runs in behind the bungalow behind us. There's a loading bay in the back garden there, which is where they used to load the cattle and the milk. So that was the spur off the main line to the loading bay and then back onto the track again. So that is part of the original track.
But of course, the flowers really synonymous with the churches as well,
yes.
Carol. And I suppose that's one of the purposes of the events for fundraising.
It's a fundraising event. It's also an outreach, and it's also an outreach in that a lot of the gardens that participate, I would say, only a couple of them are sort of actual churchgoers, but they all share the same desire to keep the churches going and open and accessible for generations to come out, and we can only do that by fundraising because the churches purely survive on donations from Joe Public. We get no central funding, so all the buildings that we inherit are old buildings with lots and lots of history, but they're hard to maintain and expensive to maintain. But it's by doing these sort of things that we can actually get money to keep them open and open for weddings, funerals. And then obviously sharing that, you know, at times of bereavement and funerals, helping people through those times, and again celebrating through weddings and christenings. So
And it shows, I suppose, the close knit of the communities and the parishes around, particularly the north here, that all of these churches around these parishes aren't afraid to all join in and muck in and help each other.
And that's, I think that's more of a recent thing over perhaps the last 10 years. I think probably 10 years ago we were all sort of in our own little church and fundraising for our own churches, and then the churches had a big change round probably 10 so years ago, and we changed all the parish boundaries. So we all joined together, so we're all in one committee meeting and one fundraising committee meeting and all sharing everything. So it makes... And it's so nice to actually join together, and we can do things more.
It's a sociable thing, because people who may not go to church still come and mix here, and the fun we've had today with the banter between people has been fantastic. So I think that even if they're not churchgoers, it's still part of the, as you say, it's building the community spirit.
Yeah.
And that's what we want.
And how much preparation does it take every year? Because there's such a variety of flowers and shrubs here.
I grow on a lot of plug plants in the early spring and plant those on. So it's an ongoing thing throughout the year, but it's like everything else. If you keep on top of the big jobs, it doesn't become too onerous, and that's what it's all about. Just a little often, basically, keep the grass tidy and keep the weeds down. And
hence why we've got an automatic lawnmower.
It happens to us all, I tell you. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for letting the public and myself come and have a look around your garden here.
We've
and hope it continues.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, yes. Lovely, thank you.
Well, thank you there to Carol and John Ainley showing me around their garden at the old railway station at Sulby, and fantastic, the elm trees there and great bloom, all the colour of the flowers, and just a magnificent thing to do, really, and a brave thing to do, to let the public in and have a look at your garden and your flowers and your ornaments. And it's a strange one, isn't it, whether you think they're going to be all gardeners as well.
It's so refreshing to get out in amongst nature and to see all the colours coming together now as everything's blossoming and blooming. But the time and effort these gardeners go to, it's nearly the same as raising livestock in agricultural farming. A lot of time and effort goes into it. They're weather dependent. But for us to have the opportunity to go and have a look around these gardens and hopefully inspire us to do a little bit more, what work, wonderful displays.
Indeed. Yeah, make sure you've got good net curtains stuck up as well, if you're getting the Clarkson thing. Anyway, we'll leave it there for this week's programme. As we said, if you've been affected by anything on the programme, there are them contacts for the I'll Stand Up to Suicide available on the websites and Facebook pages as well, and many other sources as well. That's it for this week's Countryside. We're back next week with more. So until then, from me, Simon Clark.
And me, Kerry Kermode.
We see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.